This is Eco Radio KC, a locally produced exploration of positive solutions to the ecological challenges we face as we work to create a healthier future for our community and the planet.
Good evening, and thank you for tuning into Eco Radio. On tonight's program, Michael Berg joins us from the Missouri Sierra Club to discuss lobby days. Then Dorothy Barnett from the Climate Energy Project will discuss the upcoming event, Environmental Justice's Challenges in My Backyard. Finally, Ann Solentrop will phone in from a nuclear protest in Washington, D.C. But first, I'm naturally with your headline news. ThinkProgress.com reports, as global ocean temperatures begin to recover from the record-breaking El Nino, the tremendous impact on the world's coral reefs is still being calculated. During an El Nino event, corals can bleach. Abnormally hot water makes their symbiotic bacteria emit toxins, and coral polyps, which are tiny animals, expel them reflexively. Since healthy bacteria provide food to the corals, without them, the corals can starve to death. When that happens, reefs that have grown up over centuries can die in a matter of weeks. Over the past 2 weeks, a team of researchers led by Julia Bohm, a biologist from the University of Victoria, and Kim Cobb, a climate scientist at Georgia Tech, they have been stationed at Christmas Island, and via hundreds of dives, they have taken comprehensive measurements of the reef's health. Their estimate is, as of early April, about 80% of the coral colonies at Christmas are now dead, and another 15% are severely bleached and likely to die. From cores that Cobb's team have analyzed, she estimated there's been nothing like the current die-off in Christmas in the 7,000 years of ancient coral history there. About 10 months ago, this reef was still mostly healthy, as it has been for thousands of years. Global warming will make the pressure on global corals even worse in the coming decades, and many of the world's reefs can expect future bleaching events to occur more frequently. KansasCity.com reports, a bright red vermilion flycatcher was seen Monday in a Johnson County park at 116th Street in Homestead Lane. Since birders started keeping track decades ago, the species has been sighted in Kansas and Missouri only 26 times. The bird normally inhabits the southwestern United States. It's hard to tell how this bird got this far north, said Matt Garrett, a field biologist from the Johnson County Park and Recreation District. Storms could have blown him off course, or it could be a young bird that got lost. Looking at the Kansas and Missouri records, this appears to be the time of the year that this bird gets lost. EcoWatch.com reports, decades-old documents unearthed by the Center of International Environmental Law, or CIEL, show that executives in the oil industry knew fossil fuels posed a risk to the environment as early as 1968, and in the next decades carried out a campaign to cloud public perception of these risks. In 1946, a consortium of oil companies, including Shell, ExxonMobil, and Chevron's predecessors, created the Smoke and Fumes Committee. Its purpose was to commission research on smog and air pollution resulting from fossil fuels, which the oil industry would use to shape public opinion on these issues. Out of this committee grew the Stanford Research Institute, which was set up to provide an academic shroud for the industry to fight accusations that its product caused pollution. The Smoke and Fumes Committee was folded into the American Petroleum Institute a few years later, and API remains one of the industry's biggest lobbies. In 1968, in what began as research on air pollution, the Stanford Research Institute produced its first ever study on climate change. Known as the Robinson Report, this paper showed that fossil fuels are the most likely cause of rising global CO2 levels and emphasized the need to reduce emissions to prevent climate change. The LATimes.com report, California, Oregon, and a private utility Wednesday signed an agreement that could finally take down four hydroelectric dams that block salmon migrations on the Klamath River. The pact, signed by the governors of both states and federal officials at the mouth of the Klamath in Northern California, spells out a roadmap for pursuing the dam's demolition without congressional approval. It amends part of the complicated 2010 pact that gave the U.S. Interior Department a major role in the decommissioning and required Congress to sign off on the removal. Congress failed to act on authorizing legislation by last year's deadline, throwing the deal into limbo. The new version eliminates direct federal involvement, sidestepping the need for congressional authorization. And that's all I have for the news. Now I'd like to invite Mike to the mic.
Thank you very much, Natural E. You are tuned to 90.1 FM KKFI Kansas City Community Radio, and this is a pretty busy Eco Radio. KC, our first guest is Michael Berg from the Missouri Sierra Club. Are you there, Michael?
I'm right here. How's it going, Mike?
Welcome to Eco Radio KC. So, lobby days. Tell us what's going on there.
Well, the Sierra Club is organized this year. Four different times the members come from different parts of the state and go to Jefferson City to have discussions with legislators about environmental issues. And so we have next Wednesday, April 27th, we're having Sierra Club members and supporters coming from the Kansas City area and much of the western part of the state to Jefferson City to talk to legislators. There's a lot of very serious issues going on in the Capitol right now, and we need to make sure that people hear the voices, that the legislators hear the voices of their constituents.
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess the two main things I want to get across in our time together are what are you lobbying for or against?
Well, first of all, there's several issues in the Capitol this year. One major issue is there's unprecedented attacks by the legislature on our state park system this year. The Department of Natural Resources has a great piece of land on the 11 Point River in southern Missouri. They're ready to start up a new park, and legislators are trying to stop the creation of that park and force the auction of the land. You have other attempts to take away much of the funding for the Department of Natural Resources, especially the monies dealing with our state park system. And there's other bills, such as there's an attempt to allow ATVs on the Katy Trail, which would not be good for bicyclists and people walking, and that could damage the trail. These are all attempts to weaken our park system. So that's one big issue. There's also legislation this session, several bills meant to take away the rights of individuals and local governments to control factory farms, CAFOs, confined animal feed operations, and things that say, well, county governments cannot have noise ordinances, cannot have odor ordinances. Taking away people's free speech rights to comment on the quality and conditions in which meat is processed and created, taking away the right to deal with the serious health and environmental effects of putting huge amount of cows, pigs, turkeys, chickens on a very small amount of land.
Am I right in thinking that a lot of these CAFOs in Missouri are like owned by China or Chinese?
Some of them are.
Some of them are.
Smithfield Food is owned by a Chinese corporation.
Richard Mabian's here with me, too. He wants to ask you a question. Hold on, let me get you.
Michael, it's nice to meet you, pal. I'm with the Kansas ex-con Sierra Club, and yeah. I was listening to the list of items that you all are going to be lobbying against, and I was wondering, is there any concern about the mixture of all those items, or is this a concentrated a way of being able to reach your Jefferson City legislators? I mean, what is the, because you're going from parks to yeah. the animal circumstances, and you know,
well, there's this, and we want to make sure the legislators know that the Sierra Club is monitoring what they're doing. We're paying attention to issues that affect our natural environment. The other main issue is there's a tax on the Clean Power Plan. So we want to stop legislation that will make it so the Department of Natural Resources cannot deal with it, cannot enact the Clean Power Plan, cannot even prepare to deal with the Clean Power Plan. So we want to make sure the legislature knows where we stand, knows that constituents are watching, and knows that people are coming to Jefferson City to let them know that. And we also have people contact the legislators in districts. We've had so far 14 different meetings with prominent legislators in districts. So the Sierra Club's goal is to protect, preserve, and enjoy the natural world, and that's what we're coming to watch, to Jefferson City to do.
Okay.
All right. And then, so for people who may be listening right now that may be interested in joining you, what's the best course of action to connect with you folks?
Well, if you're interested in coming, first of all, call our office. You can call our office at 1-800-628-5333. That's 1-800-628-5333. I'll be there in the morning. If you call now, that's fine. Leave a message, and we'll get right back to you. And again, that's Wednesday, April 27th, next Wednesday. We're meeting in the Capitol, in Hearing Room 6, in the basement of the Capitol, the House Hearing Room 6, shortly before 10 a.m. So again, call us at 1-800-628-5333 and just say you're interested in Lobby Day and leave your information. And we'd love to have you there so that you can make your voice heard to protect Missouri's environment, which is under great threat this year in our legislature.
Okay, Michael, thank you very much, and good luck, and keep us posted. Let us know how you make out, okay?
All right, will do.
All right.
Thank you.
All right, thanks. We're going to go to our next segment after this first break. Richard Mabian is going to be talking to Dorothy Barnett about some Earth Day activities. But first, we've got a few things for you to hear, so do stay tuned.
James Henry on the Panama Papers and Sanho Tree on Hiroshima. Counterspin, Tuesday at 6:30 p.m.
Have a little spare time? Always wanted to be in radio? Well, then come on down and get involved in your community radio station, 90.1 FM, KKFI. On the air or behind the scenes, we need your help, and it's lots of fun, too. For more information, call Bill at the KKFI offices at 816-994-7869.
Pack your bathing suit and your hiking boots for this current cast. Going to the dunes usually means a day at the beach, but the Indiana Dunes National Lakeshore, which spans 15 miles of Lake Michigan's coastline, is more than sand and waves. Kathy Martin of the nonprofit Save the Dunes says trails wind through a variety of habitats.
If you were to start at the lake, you would walk through to the beach, a foredune, a forested dune, oak savanna habitats, wetlands, and then woodlands.
Oak savannas, once common in the Midwest, are rapidly disappearing.
We have some really high-quality ones here left, so we'd like to say we have the best of the last of some things.
Making the dunes not just a beach, but a biological gem. Current Cast is produced in partnership with Cornell's Atkinson Center for a Sustainable Future. Learn more online at currentcast.org.
All right. Hello, everyone. This is Richard Mabian, and first of all, let me welcome you to the show. I hadn't had a chance to do that yet. And before I go to Dorothy, I cannot pass up this, making a comment about this particular bird that we heard about during the opening that seems to somehow gets blown off course by the wind and ends up in Missouri. Ends up somewhere in this part of the country. I just want to say, if you see these birds, do what you can to steer them back to the course they need to continue their flight to wherever it is they're supposed to go. And from what I can see, it's the bright red vermilion flycatcher. Oh, yeah. Keep your eye out for them. If you see any, give us a call here. Use our website and let us know you saw some floating around your neighborhood. All right, with that out of the way, I want to get back to Dorothy. First of all, let me say, this is probably one of the most environmentally busy times that I've ever experienced in my whole career being involved in this environmental movement and conservation movement. There is so much going on that it's amazing that any of us are able to keep our heads on straight. The reason we have Dorothy here on the floor, first of all, hello, Dorothy.
Hi, Richard.
Hi, good. This is Dorothy Barnett, and she's with Climate Energy Project, and she's been working with me here in the Kansas City metropolitan area, especially in Kansas. We got together to work on that the clean power plan that got sidelined, but still that was what initially brought us together. And in the process of doing that, we had decided we wanted to plan an event that had that had to do with bringing the NAACP Environmental Justice Director from Washington, D.C. here to Kansas City to speak. And at first, it was just wide open, but when I brought it up to the state NAACP Council, who you have to go through to work those out, they thought it would be appropriate to bring her in when they were hosting a NAACP statewide quarterly meeting, which was going to be in Olathe in April. So we ended up scheduling this to have the quarterly meeting in April so she could speak to the NAACP leaders from around the state on Saturday. But on Friday, Dorothy and I got together and decided to have her come in and speak to the public in general on Friday. So that's what this conversation is about. Dorothy and I are getting ready to give a pitch to you for you to consider attending this function. Dorothy, I'll let you go ahead and pick it up from there and just kind of lead into what it is we're doing and where we're doing it and what you want people to know about it.
Well, thanks, Richard, for bringing me in to talk about this really exciting event that we're co-hosting together with you and the NAACP. We're really excited to have Jackie Patterson be presenting a keynote presentation on Friday, April 22nd. We have an afternoon of events, and we're calling it Environmental Justice Challenges in My Backyard. And we're going to talk about community health, we're going to talk about water, and we're going to talk about energy. And we just have a really, really terrific lineup. And so I'm really excited to be here and talk about it a little bit. I'll give you kind of a what, when, where, and then we can talk a little more about the things that you're excited about, Richard.
Okay.
So on Friday, April 22nd, which is Earth Day, so if you don't have Earth Day plans, you could join us at the South Kansas City Public Library from 1 to 4. We're going to start the day out with some informational booths and refreshments for just a community meet and greet of a variety of organizations who are showcasing the great work that they're doing in both Kansas and Missouri and the greater Kansas City area. And then, as I mentioned, we'll have Jackie Patterson give a keynote address about the work of NAACP and what they've been doing from their environmental and climate justice program. We are very excited to have a Q&A moderated by Mrs. Margaret May, who I know your listeners know well, the director of the Ivanhoe Neighborhood Council. We'll have some participation with Althea Moses, EPA's Environmental Justice Coordinator. And then we're going to have a really terrific panel, of which Richard is going to be part of. We're excited to have Children's Mercy is going to be talking about their environmental health program and providing an opportunity for people to know some of the resources that are available through Children's Mercy to help people recognize the things in their homes and families that they can do to reduce environmental exposure. So,
well, you left
I'll stop
yourself
there
out.
For a minute, Richard, and let you jump in.
Well, you left yourself out because you're also on that panel, and you could explain a little bit about what you're going to be covering also.
Sure. So that panel's going to have a health, a local engagement, boots on the ground, which is Richard, and then I'm going to talk a little bit about where clean energy fits into that environmental picture. I'm going to give a little bit of information about where we are with our energy, what we get, where we get it from, and then really I want to spend some time with the group talking about the impact that individuals can make on topics of clean energy, how they can be engaged with both the utilities and with the state and with each other on ways to help protect their health and their environment as it relates to energy.
Okay. I will say that I follow up what Dorothy's been saying by saying that I think this is probably one of the most outstanding group of individuals that have been brought together in this country. I take homage in being able to say in this country. And the reason I can say that is because very few times will you find this caliber of environmental justice people sitting down in the same environment, same room, talking about what their experience and their perspective of environmental justice as far as the environment and conservation issues that are going on in this country. I think it's one of the things that all of us in Kansas City should be proud of. She mentioned that it's at the South Kansas City Public Library. That's in Kansas City, Kansas. For you all that understand the sections of town, that's the new library that was built out in Argentine. It also has one of those air monitoring benches. They are EPA only funded. Something like three or four of those to be placed in the United States, and Argentine was fortunate enough to be a recipient of this bench. It's running 24/7. It's set up in such a way that you can go online. This is just a sight to behold. So it would be really good for you out there listening to be able to take in an environmental event. Now, I want you to understand, we didn't plan this for Earth Day. We got to Earth Day through the back door, because if you heard me, I said that when I took this to the NAACP, they said, okay, fine, let's do it in April when we have our state quarterly meeting. And that just happened to be April the 23rd. So then Dorothy and I are busy like little beavers getting in at Ogla. Don't let me leave Ogla out. She got sick on us today. And I'm sorry, Ogla, I hope you're listening in. And I'm giving you a shout out. Hope you get well up there. But we were busy like beavers doing our planning to set this thing up. And then all of a sudden it dawned on us one day that we were setting it up for Earth Day. So I don't want you to think that this is like some one of those glorified Earth Day events where you come out and everybody's happy for 24 hours. This was set up for us to be able to provide the Kansas City metropolitan area with a what I consider to be a very well needed perspective of environmental justice. And that if you don't know what that is, it would behoove all of you to look that up on the internet, to see what it is that we're really going to be talking about. Dorothy, I'll come back to you on that.
Well, I would say, Richard, we got lucky with the date.
Yes.
because you are exactly right. It was not intentional.
Right.
No doubt about that. It was definitely an accidental happening.
That's right.
But I would say that I would agree. I've heard Jackie speak passionately about the work that she's doing. She has been in this project since 2007 and really focusing in on environmental justice and trying to figure ways to bring communities that are impacted, generally communities, minority communities, generally communities who are suffering from poverty, who are generally the ones most affected when we talk about energy, when we talk about water. We've all seen what's been going on in Flint, Michigan, a lot of communities impacted by those issues with water quality. And so I think it's a timely event. We're really excited to have an opportunity to just work with people in the community. We have some groups that are going to be participating and bringing booths out, and we're excited about that. But we really want to make sure we're also reaching into the community and getting just the folks who live there to come and share with us what their concerns are, not just what our issues are, but really listen to the people that live in the community about what they're concerned about.
Okay, I want to hit one more highlight, and then we're going to repeat the date, the time, and all that. That highlight is Flint, Michigan. So far as I'm concerned, Flint was a wake-up call for all of us in this country. And for the caliber of persons that environmental justice was designed to reach were the caliber of persons who were affected by that circumstance up there in Flint. And we are fortunate enough to have two of the people who have been to Flint, who have been working in Flint, and ironically, they may have been working from the opposite side of the street. Althea Moses is with EPA. They had her to go to Flint to represent them and their issues and their concerns and circumstances that's going down in that situation. And Jackie Patterson was up there with the NAACP, representing the interests and the concerns of the people who live in that town. This will be the first time they have had a chance to be on the same program to give their perspectives of what went on in Flint. You can't find that anyplace else. And for Kansas City to have that ability, we need to be there, folks. All of you environmental people out there listening to me, I know you had your Earth Day plans all set up and you're going to eat hot dogs and popcorn and all the good stuff that goes on around town. But I'm telling you, this academically is at the top of the line. So, Dorothy, you want to run through the logistics again?
I would. I would just say that if you have an opportunity to come out at 1 p.m. on Friday, April 22nd, to the Argentine Library, South Kansas City Public Library, at 3404 Strong Avenue, there will be booths there with from the Sierra Club, from the Kansas City, Kansas Community College Sustainable Environments Committee. Friends of the CAW is going to have a booth and talk about water. We're excited to learn more about the Diesel Health Project, who's also going to have a booth, as well as information from the NAACP, from my organization, the Climate and Energy Project, and others. So an opportunity to talk and learn more about what organizations are doing in the community. And then we'll start with our keynote at 2 p.m., followed by a really terrific panel talking about health and water and energy and really highlighting the positive solutions that are coming right out of Kansas City, Kansas, with the work that you're doing, Richard.
Okay.
And then we'll spend some time with a little brainstorming and see what else people care about, what else we should be talking about. It's going to be a great day.
That's a good part. That's one thing to mention, because we want to have this as a jumping off spot for us to continue to have these kind of sessions where we are educating with each other. So many times all of us end up being involved in circumstances where we are the lone wolf. We are the lone environmental organizations that's making something happen or something occur. And so I'm saying this is a time for us to come together and start working and sharing with each other about the future, the directions that we want to go. You all know the kind of stuff I do. And so regardless of what else is being discussed in this conversation, some kind of emphasis on the education of our children is going to be important. That is a main factor, and for me, that's what's going to be added to the table. When you talk about boots on the ground, I'm going to talk about some of the things you've heard me talk about in here of what we're doing to educate our future generations so they'll be in a position to carry this battle on.
Sounds great, Richard. We're really excited to have Dr. Jennifer Lowry with Children's Mercy, again, talking about the great work that they're doing and the concerns that we're seeing across the region when it comes to environmental pollutants. And so that'll bring some really pertinent information to people and then follow up with some of the solutions that you've outlined. So okay. We're really excited about the day. We hope to have a great turnout.
All right. Well, we appreciate you, Dorothy, taking the time to get on the air with me to help me promote this. Like Mike said, people are used to hearing my voice. It's kind of good to have a different voice on here. And I look forward to seeing you and all the rest of the folks on Friday. Thank you a lot for calling in.
Sounds great. Thanks, Richard. Have a great evening.
Sure thing. Thank you. Bye now. All right.
John Willis is an economist at the Kansas City Federal Reserve Bank who studies employment trends. His recent finding is middle-skill jobs are vanishing, polarizing the workforce, and worsening inequality. He will discuss this development and the workers' responses on this Wednesday's All Souls Forum, 6 p.m. right here on KKFI.
On the next, Sprouts.
It certainly is very inspirational. I think, really, the Moog synthesizer fully defines what we've become to know as progressive rock music.
The late Keith Emerson, in his own words, Thursday at noon.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. New research predicts that nearly all coniferous forests in the American Southwest could be lost to climate change by the end of the century. Dr. Nathan McDowell, who led the Los Alamos National Laboratory study, says the projected mass die-off of trees like junipers and pinyon pines will be widespread within the next 34 years.
The key takeaway from a study like this is that while the exact numbers are tenuous, the general trajectories they project are pretty robust. All of the different research is pointing in the same direction, which is that we are going to lose forests around the world.
What's going to kill so many trees? The big culprits will be more frequent and intense droughts and heat waves.
There's one smoking gun. We must curb CO2 emissions dramatically. And the Paris climate talks last December are a great step in that direction.
And smart forest management is critical, since drought also increases the risk of wildfire. McDowell advises prescribed burns to control grasses while keeping old trees alive, limiting the chances of a mega blaze and reducing competition for water. McDowell says such practices could ultimately buy more time for our Southwest forests while we address the root causes of global warming. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. Learn more at yaleclimateconnections.org.
All right, I'm back again, and like I said, you all, if you get a chance, we really would appreciate you coming by, checking us out this Friday, April 22nd, from 1 to 4. I think it's a good way to do two things. One, to show these hardworking environmental folks how much you appreciate what we out here doing. And the second one will be able for you to be able to hear and be updated and maybe get some of those questions, key questions you got that have been having, answered. All right, I was sitting in my house chasing down rainbows, in other words, trying to keep up with all the confusion that's been going on in this world with this environmental stuff, and I get a telephone call from one of my favorite persons, and she goes, "Guess where I am?" And I go, "Where?" "Washington, D.C. at a nuclear, whatever it is." So I'm going to bring her in. I said, "Well, you called on the right evening. I'm going to be on the show, so we're going to have you on." So, Ann, hello.
Yes.
How you do, young lady?
I'm doing great. I'm here at the pizza party right across from the Capitol.
Aren't that
and with
nothing?
My friend Jordan. He came. We're trying to get younger people to come to this annual event where the Alliance for Nuclear Accountability talks to Congress about getting rid of nuclear weapons and cleaning up the mess they have made all over the country.
Okay, you and I got about 14 minutes. And so here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to ask you a series of questions so people out here will know what the heck we're talking about, okay?
Okay.
First of all, the Alliance. What is that Alliance?
It's about 36 organizations throughout the whole country, and we all live near the nuclear weapons production or waste areas.
And the name of it again is?
The Alliance for Nuclear Accountability.
Okay. Now, this group does what? What is this group's objective?
We are the watchdogs on the Department of Energy, the National Nuclear Security Administration, the system that makes nuclear weapons for the United States. We come here to be a voice for the people and for the environment to push back on the people that want to keep making more and more nuclear weapons without any accountability. And, you know, this is our tax money they're using.
You know,
they don't want to clean up the mess they made either.
Okay, well, I don't know about the other folks up there, but I know about you. And I feel very fortunate to have a person like you that is my personal watchdog. That's what we need more of. But I can just about imagine if those other people up there are anywhere close to being like you, Washington must have smoke rising up above it with all the energy that has to be there, the energy to do what it is you all do. Are they there from all 50 states? That's how many we got now. We haven't got no new states or anything, have we? Are they there from all 50 states?
We're from all over the country, from California to the East Coast, Midwest, North, South. And, you know, we are the ones that are asking the questions and holding their feet to the fire and complaining. You know, we see things being wastefully spent on these things that we don't even need. We're never going to use them. And meanwhile, they're ignoring people that are getting sick around the nuclear complexes. Like in Kansas City, the people that worked at the plant are sick and dying. And they haven't even looked at whether the neighborhood has been affected as far as cancer. Nobody's even thinking about, you know, a lot of these things because they're out of sight, out of mind.
Yes.
Nobody even worries about them.
Well, you know, so, I'm thrilled to death to know we have you there representing. Now, you said you took someone. Did you take someone with you?
Yes. Yes. And his name is Jordan Hamrick, and I'm going to put him on here so he can say a few words.
What's the last name?
Hello.
Yes, sir. This Jordan?
Yes, this is Jordan.
What's your last name, Jordan?
Jordan Hamrick.
And you from Kansas City?
I am from Kansas City, the Missouri side. That's
okay.
Right.
What part of the city do you live in?
I'm in the Northeast in Pendleton Heights.
Okay,
there,
I just want to make sure.
I live in a Kitchell community called Jerusalem Farm.
Oh,
and we work
okay.
on service retreat experiences, fixing houses for people of low income.
Okay, well, I just wanted the folks out in your community, you know, your neighborhood, to know that they had a homeboy on the air talking from D.C. I'm glad
That's
to
right.
hear that you're there. You're in fine company being there with Ann. Give me your impression of what you've experienced. How long have you been there, first of all?
Well, we've been here since, we got in Saturday night, but we've been with the other people since Sunday.
Okay.
And I'll tell you what, it's been incredible meeting these activists and these people who have fully dedicated themselves to raising these issues, which are so often put on the side. You know, so much we're thinking about other issues of that have to do with the environment and things, but we forget about how these massive weapons and the form of energy that we're creating from nuclear power creates devastating effects to our environment. So it's been a fantastic experience so far, getting trained along these longtime professionals in the industry.
Yes, I've been there with the folks before, if not maybe for what you're there for right now, but I've been with some of those main people you are with. So I understand
awesome.
The circumstances that go on up there in Washington. So you said that you work in dealing with homes for low income folks?
That's right. That's correct.
Well, I tell you what, sir, when you get back to town, get in touch with us. We'd like to get you on here and have you give us a rundown about what it is you do here in this town.
Oh, well, that'd be fantastic. We really appreciate you having us on here now, talking about what we're doing here in D.C.
Yes.
And I will definitely get in contact with you, and we'll talk about the good that we can create there in Kansas City as well.
Okay, so now are you all going to go up and talk to legislators?
That's right. Actually, we already did today. I had two different meetings today, and Ann was at a couple separate meetings. And so we're going to be at it for the next 2 days, on Tuesday and Wednesday as well. We're going to be meeting with all kinds of people.
So what kind of reception have you been getting?
So far today, it was pretty positive for the most part. And so people really being receptive of the Alliance for Nuclear Accountability. They put out a report each year. And so our main thing is we're handing them this report. And we're kind of walking them through them, our points of what we want to emphasize. And a lot of this information is brand new for the people we're speaking to. So in one meeting, they were very interested in the information in the packet that we gave them. And I could tell they were really going to take it up and take it to heart and really try to listen to us. So it's been positive overall.
Well, you know, I really appreciate you getting on the phone and filling us in. It's always great to see. She said you were younger, so I'm not going to ask your age so that you won't have the girls running around here waiting on you to get off the plane when you get back to town. But I'm glad to see that you are taking an interest in what you're doing, and you will be the next generation of Ann's out there fighting this battle with us. So thanks a lot.
Absolutely.
And let me speak to Ann again.
Thank you so much. Yeah, I'll pass it back over to Ann. Thank you so
you,
much
sir.
For having us on. We appreciate
yes,
it.
Yes, sir.
All right.
And this year, we had 12 to 20 younger folks come. We had a person that donated $5,000 so that we could finance bringing them to D.C.,
yes.
And we want to keep increasing that every year.
So wait. Is this the session that you were talking to me about trying to find some young folks?
Yes.
You know,
yes.
And when you get back here, instead of, because I just was caught off guard, I didn't have any time, I'd like to see if we can create a ongoing something, whatever we call it.
Yes.
Starting to get people prepared, because I'm going to be honest with you. I'd like to see some young people of color children up there.
My goodness, yes.
And I would love for that to come out of Kansas City. My concern was when you start talking about young people of color children, you know, we got to deal with parents, and I think they need to be made totally aware.
No, they'd be over 18.
Yeah. Well,
they'd
even
be
over 18. I mean, even over 18. I want the family to feel comfortable with where the kids are going, who they're going with, and the whole bit. So I'd like to be able to do that. When you get back, you and I get together, and we'll try to figure out some way we can
Definitely, and
group.
Jordan might be able to talk to them and kind of tell them how it is and everything that they do.
What we need to do is find a group to represent that. Instead of, because you and I, you know, we 24/7 folks. And so sometimes we just don't have the wherewithal to be able to add some additional responsibility into our day, 24-hour day. So maybe we can find an organization in town, a group, some special group. Maybe some of the listeners that's listening to us on the air right now would want to undertake some kind of a program or a method that we could use to get some of them young folks. It's a shame you and I talk about young folks and we're talking about 20-year-olds. I remember a time I talked about young folks, I was talking about 18 and 19-year-olds. Now,
yes,
we're getting older.
But, I mean, we have to tell
50-year-olds.
Everyone about this as we're coming up because we're not going to be here forever.
That's right.
And I told them a couple years ago, I said, everybody in the room here has gray hair. And so
that's our responsibility. That's my forte. I wish you was going. You won't be back in town for Friday, but that's our cup of tea. I think somebody might be calling in. Hold on just a second. But that's one of our that's one of our concerns, is that we are reaching a younger set. Is this a caller?
Yes.
Oh, we got a caller. I think it's Maurice. Maurice, you on the air? You got something to say there, buddy? Maurice.
Yeah, how you doing?
Doing fine. You got something you want to say there? And Maurice is on the line.
Hey.
Thank you, Maurice, for doing your work.
He came,
baby. I think it was 2010.
Yep.
We had a whole van full of people that came.
Okay, what's up, Maurice?
Hey, I'm doing all right. I want to say thank you for Ann for keeping it up.
Keeping it up
out there.
Yep.
Can she hear me?
Yeah, she can hear you.
Yeah,
okay.
I can.
Yeah, we had a good representation of young people at the Think Outside the Box. You remember Ann?
There you go. Yeah.
We had a couple from Kansas City, and the young people, they are young people that's getting interested now because their mothers and fathers are dying out there at that plant. So we've got a resource if we can. We can't seem to get enough noise or media out here, even though some of the media people are also filing claims, you know, and waiting for their benefit.
Yeah.
We can't get them interested in it. But thanks for doing the work, and you too, Richard.
Mm-hmm.
You know
I'm here, buddy.
You've been hanging in there, too.
In fact, I saw an email from you today. I was going to send you one tonight to talk to you. But thanks, Maurice, for calling in. We appreciate you.
All right, then.
Okay, and we're going to have to get ready to get out of here. But you know I love you to death. Also, I need to share this with folks, that the reason Ann called was because she ran into a young man up there that works with testing water. And when he told her what he did, she told him about me, and immediately he wanted to meet me. So she called me to this guy, and I could talk on the phone. And I'm just really tickled to death. And my missus was in the room while all this was going on, and when I got off the phone, I said, "Now you know." That's what life is supposed to be about. When we represent each other in that way, we can't help but succeed. That's a win-win. That can't help be a win-win.
Yeah.
And I appreciate
you. I like to hook people together. I do. I like to network.
Yes.
That's fun.
Yes. We have to be able to do that. We have to be the example, Ann. We have to set the example and find some way to have our stories told. David Corton's number one comment was about rewriting the stories, and we need to put ourselves in a position that we can start getting our stories told so the future generation will understand how they're supposed to react. Because I'm telling you right now, what I see going on with the people that are younger than us is the same crap that was going on when we first got into this game. They're not working with each other. They're not collaborating with each other. They're not talking with each other. They are all out there trying to outdo each other. So we got our work set out. Maybe we can find a way to start getting this across to them, what we got going on. Love you.
Collaboration
is the game, but we got to teach people how to collaborate. The collaboration doing is a Donald Trump collaboration. I'm in charge and everybody follows suit. So,
cooperation, communication.
That's not a negative, Donald. That's just a matter of fact. Take care of yourself up there. I don't want to hear no wild stories about you running around nude in the fountains.
Oh, no.
Love you, girl. Take it and take it. Make us proud, okay?
All right.
Okay, baby.
I'm representing. Bye.
Yeah, bye-bye. All right, gang, we back here. Mike, I think it's about our time, isn't it?
Well, we got a couple minutes, so let me tell you, we've got a couple things coming up on Eco Radio KC before we turn it over to Natural E for the calendar. Well, not on Eco Radio, but on KKFI. So Wednesday morning on Alternative Radio, the great ecologist Richard Levins, who passed away earlier this year, they'll be broadcasting a speech he gave last year, I think. And Richard Levins is the John Rock Professor of Population Sciences at the Harvard School of Public Health, and co-author with Richard Lewontin of The Dialectical Biologist, and he passed away earlier this year. So we'll be airing a very interesting speech from him on Wednesday morning at 9 on Alternative Radio. And let me see if there's anything else that might be of environmental interest coming up. You know how I'm doing this. I'm looking at KKFI.org. I think that may be about what all we have. Stay tuned for Fiesta Musical, which up until last week was on at 9:30 at night. Now comes on at 7. So that's what's going to be coming on at 7 tonight. So right after us. And let me see. I guess that's about all we have to say. I'll turn it over to Natural E with this week's calendar of events.
Join the Sustainable Sanctuary Coalition, the NAACP Kansas City, Missouri chapter, and the Missouri Sierra Club for a celebration of environmental justice. Kendra Glover from the NAACP will present on the Cold-Blooded Report, a study conducted by the NAACP, the Indigenous Environmental Network, and the Little Village Environmental Justice Organization. A local panelist will follow up with comments and questions about environmental justice in Kansas City. Learn how you can make a difference. According to the Cold-Blooded Report, quote, nearly 6 million Americans live within 3 miles of a coal power plant, end quote. Coal power plants tend to be disproportionately located in low-income communities and communities of color. So join them on Tuesday, April 26th from 7 to 9 p.m. at the Kauffman Conference Center to learn how you can make a difference. In celebration of Earth Day, Bridging the Gap, and the Sprint Center, Sprint Center is hosting a drop-off electronics recycling and secure document shredding event. Electronics recycling will be provided by Secure eCycle and document shredding provided by ProShred Vehicles. So volunteers are needed for this event to help unload vehicles as they proceed through the line. And this event is at the Sprint Center from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. on Friday, April 22nd. And just to reiterate what Richard and Ann were talking about, environmental justice challenges in my backyard, climate change, energy, and water, community health impacts. This event is on Earth Day, April 22nd, from 1 p.m. to 4 p.m. It opens up with a community meet and greet with informational booths, and then there will be a keynote presentation, a Q&A, and also a panel, and then a panel Q&A. This interactive event will provide an opportunity to discuss water, energy, and health issues in our communities and brainstorm solutions together. This is a free community event in partnership with the NAACP and the Climate and Energy Project. You can visit climateandenergy.org for more information. And again, it's April 22nd from 1 p.m. to 4 p.m. at the South Kansas City Public Library in Kansas City, Kansas, which is located at 3104 Strong Avenue.
And thank you very much. We're ready to go out, as usual we do, with a piece from the fine folks at H2O Radio and This Week in Water. Again, you are tuned to 90.1 FM KKFI Kansas City Community Radio. Stay tuned for Fiesta Musical.
Secret cables reveal water worries among world leaders. That and other news for the week ending April 17th, 2016. I'm Jamie Sudler.
I'm Franny Halperin, and it's This Week in Water.
If you run the world's largest food company that depends on water to operate its business, you're going to be watching supply very carefully.
And that's what Nestle was doing when they warned that the financial crisis in 2008 was nothing compared to what they were noticing. The world is running out of fresh water.
Governments were seeing it too, as they tried to predict where the next social or political upheaval would happen.
Last week, the Center for Investigative Journalism analyzed classified cables from the WikiLeaks disclosures of some years ago. They show that both private and public agencies see the world water situation as a crisis.
And some of those cables warned about the groundwater shortages in Yemen and Syria that would lead to unrest and instability.
And one could also draw conclusions about the world water crisis just by looking at what's happening in Arizona and Southern California.
People there have witnessed a major change in who is actually farming in their communities.
A Saudi Arabian company, Almarai, is pumping billions of gallons of groundwater to grow hay there and ship it to the Middle East, a practice some people call exporting virtual water.
The hay is used to feed about 170,000 dairy cows in Saudi Arabia because the king has now banned growing of hay and wheat to protect his country's aquifers from being depleted.
Companies from other countries, including China, Japan, and the Emirates, have also bought up farmland in the U.S. to grow and then export animal feed.
Foreign companies are attracted to farmland even in drought-stricken areas of the U.S. because of the strong legal protections for agriculture.
There was a major heat wave across Greenland last week as temperatures reached 64 degrees Fahrenheit in some places.
This was the warmest temperature ever measured this time of year, causing an early start to the annual ice melt.
Researchers from the Danish Meteorological Society were so shocked at the temperatures, they checked their instruments.
The high temperatures in Greenland can mostly be blamed on a pocket of warm, moist air pushed by southerly winds. But over the last few decades, Earth's polar climates have experienced dramatic change as a result of man-made global warming.
While temperatures were balmy in Greenland last week, NASA concluded that global temperatures in March were the highest recorded dating back to 1880. The largest mass poisoning of a population in history. That's what the UN called the water crisis in Bangladesh back in the 1990s, when it was discovered that nearly 20 million people there had water poisoned with high levels of arsenic.
Now, some two decades after the toxin was first detected, an estimated 43,000 people in Bangladesh die each year from arsenic-related diseases. Human Rights Watch says that this is due to government graft and from neglect by aid agencies.
The problem dates back to the 1970s, when NGOs drilled millions of shallow wells in rural areas to provide poor villagers with clean water to combat cholera and dysentery. It was a huge success, and infectious disease rates dropped.
What they didn't realize at the time was that the soil was heavily laced with naturally occurring arsenic. By 1995, testing showed many wells were drawing water with up to 100 times safe levels of arsenic.
Chronic exposure to arsenic is linked to cancers of the liver, kidney, bladder, and skin, as well as heart disease, but many victims in Bangladesh lack access to health care.
The government says it has installed over 200,000 deep wells over the past 12 years to mitigate the crisis. Also, it is testing wells for contamination. But according to Human Rights Watch, some politicians are giving safe wells to their supporters rather than to the people in rural areas who need them most.
Last week, a subsidiary of Houston-based Talos Energy pleaded guilty to crimes related to its oil and gas operations in the Gulf of Mexico.
Among the various charges, company contractors finagled ways to make water samples look clean. They would run the samples of produced water through coffee filters to conceal oil and grease runoff from a rig located off the coast of Louisiana.
This would make it look like the water they were discharging into the Gulf was within federal standards.
The company was fined $4.2 million and placed on 3 years probation.
And finally, by now you've probably heard the amazing story of Inky the Octopus. But if somehow you've missed this, let us fill you in.
Inky was a resident at New Zealand's National Aquarium. That is, until he made a daring break for freedom a few months ago by slipping out of his tank, slithering across the floor, and then escaping down a drain pipe into the open ocean. No note, no goodbye, just gone.
His roommate Blotchy wasn't talking, but it didn't take aquarium staff long to follow the wet streak across the floor to the 6-inch drain to realize Inky, who was about the size of a rugby ball, had shape-shifted his soft, boneless body to squeeze out the pipe.
In recent days, Inky's epic Houdini-like escape has made headlines worldwide, but most marine biologists say we shouldn't be that surprised. They say octopuses are highly intelligent with long-term memories and can even use tools.
There are numerous experiments showing that they can open containers to get at food or break out of aquariums just to get a snack. An octopus in Bermuda routinely meander to a nearby tank to feast on lumpfish before returning to its own enclosure.
Scientists also say they're intensely curious. In 2009, an octopus at the Santa Monica Pier Aquarium in California took apart a water valve, sending gallons of seawater gushing into the room.
Most of all, researchers say they're just like us. When they get cooped up and bored, they look for things to do.
Here's hoping Inky finds a garden in the shade.
This Week in Water is sponsored by the American Water Works Association. Build a better world through better water at AWWA's ACE 16 in Chicago, June 19th through 22nd. Learn more at awwa.org/ACE16.
Knows where we've been in his octopus's garden. In the shade.
Missed last week's Echo Radio KC? No worries. You can listen online at kkfi.org.
Have a little spare time? Always wanted to be in radio? Well, then come on down and get involved in your community radio station, 90.1 FM, KKFI. On the air or behind the scenes, we need your help, and it's lots of fun, too. For more information, call Bill at the KKFI offices at 816-994-7869.
Thanks for listening to Eco Radio KC on 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
You're listening to Fiesta Musical on 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
During the beginning of the 20th century, yet another unique American music form developed. When Mexican-American musicians from Texas began to play the accordions brought by immigrants from Germany and Czechoslovakia, the result was Tejano, or Tex-Mex music.